Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I ask the question, when a virus is struck before, and what have the consequences of them been? How should we handle this economically against China, and has this created a new Cold War? And I ask the question, what are the true intentions of the socialists in America? Before we get started, please email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com, and type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and hit that subscribe button. Buckle up, everybody. You are going to love this episode. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. Hope you are doing great and enjoying your lockdown the best that you could enjoy something that is unconstitutional and an erosion of freedom and liberty and everything that God has granted you. I know there's a lot of questions out there over what the government is doing, the draconian shutdowns. It looks like we might actually get our sports back. We actually might be able to watch college football. If they rob us of college football, it'll be one of the greatest injustices done to sports spectating in the history of the world. And sports are critical to a country. We can't just dismiss them as something that is a superfluous activity. And we're actually going to get into how in our history we've used sports to cope with times of national tragedy and crisis and pain. So I asked myself the question, and everyone listening to this podcast should ask the same question, what will America look like after the virus? Will we be stronger? Will we be wiser? Will we actually looking to hold the sinister Chinese Communist Party accountable for what they did to our country? So then I want to step backwards. I said, when have viruses spread across the world, and what do civilizations look like after those viruses? How have viruses actually been positive or negative change agents in civilizations, in civilization trajectory? So I went on a very deep dive, a history deep dive, to find examples of how viruses and pandemics have shaped the world as we know it today. So here's some of the history of viruses in political systems that I want to cover. I think this is instrumental to understanding the current virus, what it can do to our country and what it can do to our well-being, and most importantly, what it can do to our future. So we all know the plagues in Egypt that happened about 1400 BC, 1,400 years before Christ. It caused Pharaoh, we know this in the book of Exodus in the Bible, the greatest book ever to exist in the history of the world, to let the nation of Israel leave. If they had not left, there may have never been a Law of Moses, which, by the way, is considered the beginning of Western civilization and the concept of the sanctity of the individual. 541 AD, fast forward a little bit, we had the plague of Justinian. Now, Justinian is one of the greatest rulers of the Eastern Roman Empire. He helped start Byzantium. He was a huge advocate of Christianity. But this plague of Justinian killed an estimated 50 million people, half of the Roman world's population. Think about that. It ended with the Byzantine Emperor Justinian's plan to reunite the eastern and western parts of the empire. That was a byproduct of the plague. Justinian's Byzantine Empire was so weakened, it could not win its war against the Persian Empire, leaving both Persia and Byzantine Empire completely crippled. The resultant power vacuum was quickly filled by the Arab Islamic warriors who conquered both Persia and a large portion of the Byzantine Empire. In 1350 AD, there is the Black Death bubonic plague, which, interestingly enough, is popping up again in the streets of Los Angeles because of widespread homelessness, people not taking hygiene seriously, and us just allowing complete and total perpetual vagrancy. Now, the Black Death bubonic plague killed an estimated 75 million people, roughly one-third of the world population. A percentage of the deaths may have been from approved medical practices such as bloodletting, sweating, and forced vomiting. People used to believe back in the 1300s that if you just cut open your arm and let out blood, you might actually let the virus out of your system. Now that we know germ theory and the way that biology works, we consider this to be total nonsense. Now, this originated in Asia. Sound familiar? It was carried by fleas on animals on the Silk Road caravan trade routes to the Middle East, and then on fleas to rats on ships to Constantinople, which, of course, is in modern-day Turkey. It's called Istanbul today. It was started by Constantine the Great, the beginning of the Eastern Roman Empire. That's some Constantinople history for you today. Sicily and Venice, of course, known in Italy, and then across Europe to the British Isles. It was highly infectious and incredibly lethal. Dead bodies could not be buried fast enough and rotted on the ground, creating stench and spreading the disease faster. A quarter of the population of England died, collapsing its economic feudal system. England's King Edward III had to call a truce with its 100-year war with France, incredibly, and settle for a stalemate in its war with Scotland, allowing Scotland to stay independent. I am Scottish and proud of it, and I'm a huge proponent of Scottish independence to this day. In the early 1400s, the Viking population of Greenland was considered to be ravaged by smallpox, resulted in the settlement being abandoned and ending Viking exploration of North America. In 1492, Columbian exchange began with the Spanish arriving in the Caribbean. Diseases that were serious in Europe, such as smallpox, measles, and the bubonic plague, were even more devastating to indigenous American peoples, with an estimated 50 million dying in 1521. Cortez may not have conquered Mexico City had it not been for smallpox annihilating the Aztec population. And the Incan Empire, which we now know in modern-day Peru, may not have collapsed. Now, in 1620, more of the modern era, the Pilgrims were blown off course and landed on an uninhabited stretch of the Massachusetts coast at a place where the native population had been killed by a plague, most likely from survivors of a shipwrecked French vessel a few years earlier. So complete was this plague that other tribes refused to claim the vacated land. The Pilgrims were not prepared for native hostilities, as was experienced in Jamestown. Now, mind you, here's the significance of that plague. If they would not have entered on empty and vacated land, which unfortunately was made possible due to the virus, it might have ended their experiment in self-government, leading to the American Revolution. Providence? Coincidence? Up for you to decide. In 1775, Canada quite possibly may have been part of the United States had it not been for smallpox. Think about this. Canada might be part of our country. In September of 1775, Benedict Arnold, before he became a horrendous traitor against the United States, commanded 3,000 American troops to take Quebec. But over 1,000 of them came down with smallpox, so weakening his troops that the expedition had to retreat. Now, mind you, also during the American Revolution, many of our troops had to develop herd immunity thanks to the leadership of George Washington because there was a virus outbreak. There was a virus outbreak during us rebelling against King George. In 1812, during Napoleon's retreat from Moscow, where he tried to take Russia, fatal error for European dictators trying to fulfill their own power-hungry ambitions, it's never a good decision to take Russia in the winter. During Napoleon's retreat from Moscow, more French soldiers died of typhus than were killed by the Russians. Had his army not been devastated, he may not have been forced to abdicate and banish to the island of Elba. In 1849, a cholera epidemic originating in India's sewage-filled Ganges River quickly spread to the wells and unsanitary water supplies. It kills tens of millions of people throughout the world. Tens of millions. Incredible. In 1917, the Spanish flu infected 500 million people, a third of the world's population, and killed an estimated 100 million. It originated in Fort Riley, Kansas, among U.S. Army troops. Similar to today's confusion as to whether the Chinese coronavirus originated in a wet market or in a Wuhan bioterrorism lab using bats, there's also a lot of confusion among researchers over an origin of the Spanish flu, either from some farm animal or from some experimental vaccine from a Rockefeller laboratory using horse blood. A 2009 paper considered that a percentage of deaths in the United States could possibly be due to the United States Surgeon General's recommendation of taking very large doses of aspirin as a treatment, resulting in aspirin poisoning. Also, during World War I, typhus caused millions of deaths in Russia, Poland, Romania, Serbia. Delousing stations were established for troops on the Western Front, and was a major cause for those nursing the sick. Look, pandemic diseases have weakened nations, collapsed economies, and changed world politics forever. One more plague that changed the way that we observe science and physics in general. In 1665, London had one of its many terrible plagues. To avoid the plague, which 100,000, which was a quarter of London's population, 23-year-old Isaac Newton left Trinity College. Having just graduated, went north to his family's estate. It was there where he observed an apple falling from a tree and began contemplating the theory of gravity. He also studied optics and pioneered the study of calculus. Newton is considered to have been the height of the scientific revolution and also the beginning of the Western Enlightenment. So I went through this history for a reason, because we don't know how this current pandemic will affect the 21st century. Will we become a Marxist country? Will we become more religious, less religious? Will China now become the dominant superpower? To go back to King Justinian times when he lost so many parts of his population, he couldn't fight the Persians. Is that going to be the tale of America? Not that we lost so many people, but we lost the spirit and the conviction to fight because we became so weak and so economically damaged. What is going to be the future of our country and our civilization because of this virus? Are we going to re-embrace the ideas of liberty, freedom, the Constitution, and the individual? Are we going to refasten our borders, build the southern border wall, restrict immigration, get tough against our adversaries, and renegotiate our trade deals? Or are we going to decide to go in the foolish direction of continuing these international global compacts that deteriorate our country, weaken America, and put us into a perpetual cycle of decline? It's important to look at how this virus can impact us through tragically realistic observations. Because if we look at history and we're honest with ourselves, rarely does a nation rise from a virus better than before the virus. But we actually have an opportunity right now. We have an opportunity to use this virus as the greatest education point of liberty and freedom in American history. We can use this virus as a way to say that we should make Medicare for all normal, that we should have the government run everything, or thanks to the signaling of Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, maybe we should use this virus as a point, as a decision point, to re-embrace the ideas of liberty and freedom. Socialism is no longer a distant idea to talk about. No longer do I have to point to Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, Spain, France, Greece, Italy, Portugal, Southeast Asia, the 100 socialist experiments in 100 different countries. No longer do I have to point to it. Now I have to say socialism does not just not work, but socialism is immoral because you've lived it. When you couldn't go to a skateboarding rink, when you couldn't go to the beach, when you had to get your prom canceled and commencement canceled, that was Marxist socialism. And when we talk about socialism and we say, well, why is it that students won't embrace the ideas of free enterprise? Don't they see that socialism does not work? I'm going to answer that question because we can talk about the efficacy or the lack of efficacy when it comes to socialism, but that's not the reason why students generally support socialism. They don't actually believe that socialism will work. It's not that they believe it won't work. That's not the reason they get behind socialism. The reason is actually much more deeper and far more darker than that. But first, I want to tell you about this partner that we've just brought on to the Charlie Kirk Show, PCmatic. They do a phenomenal job. Basically, they build this beautiful, thick, medieval-style wall around your computer. But it's not even medieval style. It's new generation technology that keeps you safe from foreign hackers and actors. PCmatic is a whitelist, next-generation antivirus system designed to stop modern threats like ransomware. Independent testing, the AV test, just named PCmatic as a top performer in the cybersecurity industry, giving it the best performance award for 2019. Only PCmatic has American research, development, and support. PCmatic's competition is made in foreign countries, many where the viruses originate. PCmatic blocks annoying and malicious ads for hassle-free web browsing and makes your computers faster and more reliable, even after years of use. PCmatic protects Windows computers, including XP, Vista, Windows 7, 8, and 10, Windows servers, Macs, MacBooks, and Android phones and tablets. Imagine you not having a wall around things you care about. Bad foreign actors, such as the Chinese Communist Party, can come into your computer, steal your credit card information, steal your photos, and hack everything you care about. PCmatic is just $50 for five devices for 1 year, with a full 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you act now, PC Matic has offered my listeners a free month of security protection with the purchase of an annual license. To access this offer, go to PCMatic.com/Charlie. That's PCMatic.com/Charlie. Build the wall. Build it high. Build it thick. Build it strong. Protect yourself from the Chinese Communist Party and the foreign actors that want to see you hacked and compromised. Get world-class security that keeps your computers running great. Go to PCMatic.com/Charlie. So many of you ask and many of you email me at freedom@charliekirk.com. Charlie, I have sons and daughters and grandsons or granddaughters, and they embrace socialism, and I lay out all the facts to them that socialism does not work, that it takes from the productive and redistributes it to the people that don't work, that it incentivizes the lack of productivity. Why don't young people see it? And the reason for that is that students don't actually care about the efficacy of socialism. Many of them are tens of thousands of dollars in student loan debt. And so the easy answer is, well, Charlie, then they support it because they believe their student loans will be forgiven. That's partly true, but they actually don't even believe that that's possible. They're far too cynical for that. The reason that they support Bernie Sanders and the reason that they support Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Rashida Tlaib or Ilhan Omar or Ayanna Pressley or Jeremy Corbyn for our friends in the United Kingdom is that they don't actually believe that socialism will deliver results. They believe that socialism will deliver revenge. They feel as if socialism will avenge the injustices that they see in the world. See, a lot of young people are understandably suffering under student loan debt. They don't actually think that student loan forgiveness is right around the corner, but they do believe that if Bernie Sanders becomes president of the United States, that he will go after the evil capitalists that they attribute their suffering to and punish them. Socialism is much more about punishing the rich than helping the poor. It's much more about hating the rich than helping the disadvantaged. And so students support socialism, they support Marxism, not because they see it working from some utilitarian, centrally planning lens. When you cross-examine them, they'll yield that argument. But through their eyes, they have been indoctrinated and inculcated in this misinterpretation of reality that there's so much suffering happening in the world that the hands of the private property-defending, capitalist, business-enterprising entrepreneurs that we must go after them at all costs. And that's why Bernie Sanders, when he says, we are going to make them pay, I don't believe in billionaires, students don't actually care where that money goes if they say there's no more billionaires. They're just happy that they no longer exist. They're happy that there is a vendetta-driven revenge campaign. And so post-virus, are we going to allow the left and the power-hungry socialists to not argue for results, but argue revenge against those of us that love America? No, the exact opposite. We should use the natural instincts of our country right now to rebel against the ruling class power structure that lied to us about this virus, that misled us about the efficacy of the shutdowns and the lockdowns, and that were bought by the Chinese Communist Party. But understand that students that support socialism, don't talk to them on terms of this is going to work better than this. Because for them, a lot of them are $80,000 in debt. They study things that don't matter, and they're trying to find jobs that don't exist and never will exist. Instead, convince them that their anger should be at the university that lied to them and made them go take classes that don't matter and have no relevancy to their future. Convince them that their anger should be at the federal government that has acted unethically and borderline illegally at every single step of the turn. Make them distrust the federal government and pursue freedom and liberty because it is the only true solution for individuals that might feel disenfranchised by power systems, and understandably so. This is why students gravitate further and further to the anger-driven, venom-filled radical left. A failure to understand this will result in the virus making America more socialist, not more free. I, for one, will make sure that does not happen every single day on this podcast and in my advocacy at Turning Point USA. Look, with all the uncertainty in the world and criminals on the loose, people being released from prison, walking through your neighborhood, if you feel unsafe at home, you have to do something about it. That's why I want to talk to you about the only way to keep your family safe, Simply Safe Home Security. They're longtime friends of our show, and for good reason. Because with rapists and murderers being released from prison by left-wing politicians, you need to keep your family safe. That's what SimpliSafe does. I've used SimpliSafe, and I know that all these criminals on the loose, they don't take time off, by the way. When we say, oh, America's in lockdown, America's shut down, you think the criminals are stopping their looting? You think they're stopping going after innocent people? Well, they could be targeting your home next. And I can tell you, all the property I care about uses SimpliSafe. There's no technician or salesperson that needs to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fee or sign it to your contract. You just order online, set it up yourself in under an hour. And your home is protected 24/7 with emergency dispatch for break-ins, fire, and more, all for just 50 cents a day. And we're not the only fans of SimpliSafe. U.S. News and World Report named SimpliSafe best overall home security of 2020. So look, if you want to protect your family from the murderers, from the criminals that are on the streets, do something about it. Go to simplisafe.com/Charlie and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Break-ins are up dramatically in major cities across the country. Murderers are on the loose. That's why simplisafe.com/Charlie will help you. Protect your family. Make sure you tell them that our show sent you. From SimpliSafe and from the Charlie Kirk Show, I hope you make the right decision. I hope you put safety first. SimpliSafe.com/Charlie. No excuses. America is in a new Cold War, and this time the communists might win. This is an article by Newsweek's Bill Powell. I've worked with Bill before. He's very fair, very smart, very wise guy that works for Newsweek. I know a lot of people at Newsweek. They've done a tremendous job. I think very highly of them. And I actually write for Newsweek once a week. You can check out my column there at newsweek.com. And so this article really caught my eye, and I wanted to bring attention to it because it comes into this broader theme of what will America, what will the world look post-virus? Because people say, well, are we going to turn back to normal? That's never going to happen. There will never be a time where I'm okay with somebody traveling or communicating with the Chinese Communist Party. It's just not going to happen. Not after what they did to the world. And I wasn't okay really before it, but now there's a new Cold War. So in this piece, it talks about this, quote, it had been a bedrock belief of U.S. policy for 40 years that it was possible to bring the People's Republic of China smoothly into the family of nations. Now one of the architects of that policy was finally acknowledging the obvious, end quote. World Bank President and Deputy Secretary of State Robert Zoellick famously called on Beijing in 2005 to become a, quote, responsible stakeholder, end quote. But he acknowledged that the project had gone off the rails. Now, Xi Jinping's leadership, in quotes, Zoellick said, of the PRC president, the People's Republic of China's president, had, quote, has prioritized the Communist Party and restricted openness and debate in China. China hurts itself by forging a role model for dystopian societies of intrusive technologies and re-education camps. I completely and totally agree. We've been talking about this for months on the Charlie Kirk Show, and I believe we are in the midst of a new Cold War. And again, it goes under this broader theme of viruses have changed civilizations before. We went through the entire list earlier in the Charlie Kirk Show. It can stop wars. It can redirect resources. It can start nations. Like America was indirectly started because of a virus. Now, mind you, last week, the Trump administration moved to block shipments of semiconductors from Huawei Technologies. This kind of goes into this broader idea now that finally the U.S.-China relationship is at its lowest point since 1978. Good. I hope that a relationship worsens with the Chinese Communist Party. We need a total ice cold war. Now, some people say, well, Charlie, that's going to lead to war. I don't think so. I think the more that we trade with China, the more that we have a capital flow into their evil, sinister power regime, the closer they're going to be to have the military comparable to wipe us off the face of the earth. On May 13th, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, announced an investigation into Chinese hackers that it believes are targeting American healthcare and pharmaceutical companies in an effort to steal intellectual property relating to coronavirus medicines. Now, in this article, this great Newsweek piece by Bill Powell, he suggests that likening this pandemic to 1961 and the building of the Berlin Wall and the start of the Cold War is more apt than comparing it to 9/11 or Pearl Harbor. And I actually agree with Powell on that. I think that this is the start of the new Cold War. We should treat China like we treated Russia or the Soviet Union in the middle of the Cold War. No trade, no communication. We enlighten their people about the propaganda that China is spreading across the entire world. Now, mind you, Beijing's goal is to entice authoritarian regimes in the developing world to view it as a model to be followed. America used to be the best at spreading its ideas around the world. And now I'm not a neoconservative that thinks that we can change Libya to become Louisiana tomorrow. But I'm also not an isolationist that thinks America should just stay in its basement and not look outside of its borders in Massachusetts or California. China wants to assume that mantle. This is the ultimate problem of freedom versus tyranny. This is biblical. Are you going to be embracing the ideas of the liberation of the individual or the serfdom of the individual? Now, mind you, since Xi Jinping came to power 7 years ago, China has imprisoned more than 1 million ethnic Muslims in re-education camps. 1 million ethnic Muslims. Why is the left completely silent on this, by the way? Why is the left completely silent on the fact that there's 1 million Muslims in education camps? And for the Council for American Islamic Relations, CARE, that issues a press release every single time someone dares say the words radical Islamic terrorism or radical Islamic theocratic dictatorship, every single time that we issue those statements, CARE says that that is hate speech. Why is CARE not equally as loud or louder about the fact that the Chinese Communist Party has 1 million ethnic Muslims in re-education camps? Maybe CARE is really big on this issue and I haven't heard them. I doubt it, because I monitor very carefully what the Council for American Islamic Relations pushes forward, which is nothing more than a political correctness tool to silence dissent and silence speech here domestically in America. China has also imposed an ever-tightening surveillance state on its own citizens and cracked down on all dissent. It's also selling the technology those leaders need to create their own surveillance states. Look, Americans understand this now. They're waking up. 66% of Americans now have a negative view of China. I want to consider that to be a positive thing. I want to say, awesome, we can't even agree on the most basic things in our country, and two-thirds of America now agrees with it. Who in America are the 34% of people that have a positive view of China? Who are you? Can you please contact me? Freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to speak to you. Anyone that has a positive view of China, you are welcome on my show anytime, any place. I will give you a fair platform. I will not raise my voice. I will not insult you. I will ask questions and cross-examine you. But if only 66% of Americans have a negative view of China, that is so depressing of me. It shouldn't be surprising because of our educational institutions, higher education, our big, our most destructive institutions in America, which is our colleges, that are teaching our children to hate our country and to love adversaries. It's always under this prism. This is what they teach you in college. And I know this because I run an organization over 2,000 high school and college campuses across the country, Turning Point USA, where America's the villain. Everything outside of America must be good. That there's no other country that could be anywhere as malevolent as America. Just not possible. 34% of America do not have a negative view of China. Now, 66%, I bet that's up in polling. It should be 98, 100%. The fact that it's not shows we still have an unbelievable amount of work to do. So now it asks the question, so how will the Cold War 2.0 look different than the first with Russia? Well, first, I want to go into the military aspect of it. I want to go into the economic aspect of it. And I also want to go into the cultural aspect of it, because I think it's very important to dive into all of it. But even before I do that, it's going to look different because we have an entire portion of the American population, higher education and professors, that teach your children and teach those of you that are listening to this podcast to hate America. That's the first difference, is that these institutions do not have as much power as they did when you're trying to defeat the Soviet Union without ever launching a missile. We now have the enemy within our own country. They are propagandizing our students. There are Confucius Institutes on universities across the country. You can go to ChinaOnCampus.com. That's ChinaOnCampus.com. And we have a huge announcement coming at Turning Point USA in about a month and a half, in early July, that will expose the Confucius Institutes and actually name the names of the professors that are running these Confucius Institutes. If you go to ChinaOnCampus.com, which is a site that I privately and personally funded, you will find all the Confucius Institutes across the country, and we're updating those that have closed the Confucius Institutes. University of Akron, Alfred University, University of Anchorage, University of Arizona, Auburn University, Montgomery, Augusta University, Baroque University, Binghamton, Bryant, UC Davis, UC Los Angeles, UC Santa Barbara, Cal State Long Beach Central, Arkansas Central, Connecticut, Cleveland State, Colorado State, Columbia, Denver College, Emory, George Mason, Georgia State, GWU, University of Idaho, Kennesaw State, University of Kentucky, University of Memphis, Michigan State, Middle Tennessee, University of Nebraska, University of New Hampshire, New Jersey City University, University of North Carolina, Charlotte, Northwestern Nazarene, Old Dominion, University of Oklahoma, Pittsburgh, Portland State Presbyterian College, Rutgers, Savannah State, University of South Carolina, University of Southern Maine, Southern Utah University, St. Cloud State, Stanford, Stony Brook University, SUNY Global Center, just SUNY, SUNY Optometry School, SUNY Buffalo, Temple University, Texas Southern University, University of Toledo, Troy University, Tufts University, University of Utah, Valparaiso, University of Washington, Wayne State, Webster University, Wesleyan University, Western Michigan, Western West Virginia University, William & Mary, University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and Xavier University. Over 107 institutes in 45 states. These Confucius Institutes are funded by the Chinese Communist Party, built to try to propagandize the American public and American students to love China more than they love America. They bring in Chinese military officials. And I also want to just differentiate between the Chinese Communist Party and the people of China, because the people of China here are the victim and the Chinese Communist Party people are the villain. I make that distinction quite often. I also wrote a piece on the great website, AmericanGreatness.com, AmericanGreatness.com, about the sinister threat of the Chinese Communist Party. So that's the first difference. If I ask the question, how will the Cold War 2.0 look different? Well, the Soviet Union didn't have institutions in 45 states at 107 different places of higher education. The Soviet Union would have been kicked out in a second. Joseph McCarthy got criticized for saying, I have a list and trying to find the communists in the government. And he got rightfully criticized because he took it way too far. But he was correct that there were Marxists in our government. And he was correct that there were Marxists in our country. There's no need for even McCarthyism at all. We have a list of where our enemy is present in our country. And so to the military part, according to the Center for Strategic International Studies, a Washington think tank, Beijing spent $50 billion on its military in 2001. The year that it joined the World Trade Organization. And now that we've deteriorated and deindustrialized our country and sent all of our jobs overseas in exchange for a bunch of plastic that we don't use in our garage and textiles that we're never going to wear and toys that we're never going to use and things that we're going to throw away to sell for a dollar at a discount a decade later, now China has the money to spend $240 billion on their military compared to the United States' $633 billion. They will soon surpass us in military spending in the next couple decades because we continually buy plastic that we don't need in garbage for our garages that have no utility for our future. So in a few years, we are going to see that finally surpass. Look, China is, they're waging an asymmetric war. They're using tech to gain advantages. They already have hypersonic missiles, which they basically fly low and fast, and they're extremely difficult to pick up on radar. They are known as carrier killers because of their ability to strike U.S. aircraft carriers in the Pacific from long distances. China's pursuit of preeminence across a wide range of technologies in areas like quantum computing and artificial intelligence are central to the economic and geopolitical clash with the United States. Cyber warfare. This is so key for the United States to maintain the ability to protect against an enemy disrupting our own networks. While maintaining the ability to disrupt the adversaries, quantum networks are far more secure against cyber espionage. Quantum-based radar systems are believed to be able to defeat stealth technology, a critical U.S. war-fighting advantage. I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name, by no offense to him. I'm just going to call him Pan J. Very difficult to pronounce name. He's the father of China's quantum computing research effort, has said that the nation's goal is nothing less than quantum supremacy. China is looking to leapfrog the United States in quantum computing in the next few decades, but China is not there yet. Michael Pillsbury, one of Trump's key informal advisors on relations with Beijing, says China is, quote, nothing if not patient, end quote. The year 2049 will mark the Chinese Communist Party's 100th anniversary of taking power in Beijing. That's the year the Chinese propaganda outlets have said they'll see the completion of China's rise to the dominant power on Earth. So number two, to economically, as I mentioned, it'll be so different than the Cold War 2.0. It'd be different economically because China kind of half embraces market principles. They'll disguise themselves as a cheap labor market to be able to use our addiction to plastic, textiles, and garbage to fill our garages that we don't need but we think that we need because we've been propagandized by the corporate elites to be able to think that makes us happy. That's what makes us the USSR different because we did not have trade with the USSR. The one similarity is that the Soviet Union and China both had internationalist ambitions. The Soviet Union tried to create Cuba, Zimbabwe, and Afghanistan and India in their own communist image. They also tried to do it in North and South Korea. They tried to do it in Southeast Asia. China's trying to do the same. So that's one similarity between the Soviet Union and the Chinese. One of the biggest lies taught to students in higher education is somehow that the Soviet Union was only contained to the Eastern Bloc. That's nonsense. They tried to spread communism all across the globe. They tried to spread it to South America. They tried to spread it to Central America. All across the world, they tried to spread communism, and especially Zimbabwe. In the 1970s, when Robert Mugabe took over what was Rhodesia and turned it into Zimbabwe, the International Association of Communists, led by the Soviets, they had their international meeting in Zimbabwe, not in Stalingrad, not in St. Petersburg, not in Moscow. And by the way, this is such an important element of trade. I talk about this a lot. The more we trade with China, the more totalitarian and the more they hate America. The money they have to do all this, the money to play war games, the money to go buy up northern Italy, the money to be able to build the Bank of China as the dominant bank in the country of Italy comes from us trading with them. And we are trading dollar bills for piles of plastic we don't need. China has set a national goal. It's Made in China by 2025 plan for preeminence in not just quantum computing, but AI, biotech, advanced telecommunications, and green energy. They are so ahead of the curve than us when it comes to being able to set goals and accomplish them. It's stunning, scary, and horrifying. So trade and owning supply chains is key to their plans. The pandemic has exposed the vulnerability of locating supply chains for personal protective equipment as well as pharmaceutical supplies. The great Tom Cotton, who we've had on the show, Senator Tom Cotton, we're going to have him on again recently. I had him on the show. Go back in the archives and listen to my interview with Senator Tom Cotton. You'll be blessed by it because he was warning about the coronavirus during CPAC late February. I said, should Americans be optimistic or should they be feeling okay about coronavirus? And he was very honest. He's like, I do not feel at ease about the way the coronavirus is trending. And he was right. He was honest. So hard to find an honest politician besides Tom Cotton, Donald Trump, Rand Paul, who we have coming up on the podcast. So make sure you're subscribed. So hard to find an honest politician. He says this. He's introduced a bill that would mandate U.S. pharmaceutical companies to bring back production to the United States, to bring back production in the United States. Amen. The junior senator from Arkansas. Look, the West needs to see what China is doing and cut China out of the supply chains. Make it hurt. Make them cry uncle. Make them pay. We need to stop their stated objectives to dominate the world, and especially America, by freezing them out. This is a massive issue heading into 2020. Now, mind you, if you're reelected, Trump advisors say the president will likely pressure other industries beyond pharmaceuticals and medical equipment to bring back production. Aides are looking at the example of Japan. The Japanese legislature recently approved a program in which the government will offer subsidies up to $2.25 billion worth to any company that brings its supply chain home. The truth is this, United States companies and many Western multinationals have spent decades and billions of dollars investing in China. We'll have to fight their short-term selfish interests to decouple from China. So why is this? It's because national security interests outweigh the good and true and proven free market capitalistic ideas. We are a country with an economy within it. We are not an economy that happens to be within a country. There are plenty of other locations, even in Southeast Asia, that could work. Look, if the most important thing for you is to get access to cheap labor, if you're a textile company, go to Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, the Philippines. You can go to Taiwan, for goodness sakes, which should be its own sovereign country outside of the Chinese Communist Party. You don't have to do business with the Chinese Communist Party. We can cut off China, and you can still get the comparative advantage that all the libertarian think tanks argue so much for. I don't think it's actually as advantageous as they say. I think it's far overrated and it does more destruction than good. But if that's important to you, that's fine. That's what freedom is all about. Not with our brutal, mortal enemies like China. Caterpillar, Starbucks, Walmart, and even Tesla are examples of companies that have huge footprints and investments in China. Get out. Now, mind you, I think this is smart and probably more practical. I'm going to quote directly from Bill Powell's excellent Newsweek article. He says, quote, a smarter U.S. strategy than divorce is economic distancing. Not social distancing, economic distancing, says John Lee, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. I like their work. They do a nice job. I know a lot of friends there. They say, quote, the goal of U.S. industrial policy should be, quote, ensuring that China is not in a position to dominate key technologies and assume the leading role in dominating supply and value chains for these emerging technologies, end quote. I go a step further. I say end all trade. I don't care about the price. Sometimes doing the right thing and the moral thing for our country and for what is good for the world might have a price to it. So be it. Take the cough syrup. Swallow the pill. We'll be better because of it. Now, mind you, China is a prime example of where the Washington ruling class elites and the so-called experts have been so wrong for decades. Trump's tough on China approach has been vindicated. He's the only person that was running for president in 2016 that mentioned China in his announcement address. Why? Because his instincts were far more accurate than the Washington, D.C. intelligentsia policy think tank community. Mind you, how can we accomplish this move from China? How can we do this pragmatically? What are some actual steps that can be taken? Well, look, we need to bring India and other European and English-speaking allies closer to unite in this economic distancing. This starts with messaging. Chinese propagandists are praising President Xi's handling of the pandemic. This is a lie. President Xi should be treated like Benito Mussolini. He's just as evil, he's just as sinister, and he's just as culpable in the death and destruction of innocent human beings as Benito Mussolini. We must turn up the volume on ensuring that China is not just held accountable, but they'll play a harsh price. Now, mind you, when I say China, I mean the Chinese Communist Party. There are hundreds of millions of innocent Chinese people that will be caught in harm's way. But that will be a temporary price to pay as they'll be able to rise up against the evil Xi Jinping and advocate for freedom. The crisis has turned the tables on decades of Mussolini-style fascist march towards power. The Chinese Communist Party must be stopped, or the world will face a new era of tyranny. As I mentioned early in the episode, sports have an important place in American society. I'm a huge basketball fan. Might actually be getting my back to health to finally be able to play basketball again. Football, baseball. I love the pursuit of human excellence and human flourishing. So I want to take you back to 1942, to a critical moment in our country's history, about how sports helped us through a national crisis. But before I do that, as you know, there's no NBA, NHL, or Major League Baseball. You might think there's nothing to bet on, but you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. Do you miss the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on Big Brother, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. I can't wait to see Joe Burrow play for the Cincinnati Bengals. I can't wait to finally see LeBron James choke in the NBA Finals. And I can't wait to see the LA Dodgers blow a lead that they probably had to just dig so deep to go back to Choke City. LA Dodgers, they can't win the big one, practice. So be ready to be able to wager on the Cubs winning the World Series, the Ducks winning the college football playoff. These things matter because sports are coming back. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses of the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure that promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. Visit BetOnline.ag. Don't forget the promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So going back to 1942, look, it was just a month after the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. The nation was rattled to its core. Now, mind you, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the president when this happened. He had to kind of balance America between total despair and understandable apprehension and action. There was a Japanese submarine found outside Coronado Island right near San Diego. There was this narrative that maybe the Japanese had won. Maybe they are going to take over America. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in 1942, had a decision to make, lots of decisions to make. Now, I actually came across this story when I was last visiting the White House. I was going through the White House Archives book, fun book when you're in the White House. Highly recommend that you check it out when you're in the Oval Office waiting room. You're able to flip through it. And I found a whole page of the original document of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's letter to the baseball commissioner. And basically, it was this. Baseball owners were unsure if they should start planning for the next season. They were unsure about baseball's place in a wartime America. After much debate amongst themselves, they convinced Commissioner Kenesaw M. Landis to take the matter to the president. Landis was a staunch Republican and had a huge distaste for politics of Democrats, including FDR. And this is well documented. On January 14, 1942, he sent a handwritten letter to the White House asking for the president's advice. Landis wrote, "The time is approaching when in ordinary conditions, our teams would be heading for spring training camps. However, inasmuch as these are not ordinary times, I venture to ask what you have in mind as to whether professional baseball should continue to operate." President Roosevelt wrote back almost immediately. He said, "Honestly, I feel that it would be best for our country to keep baseball going." That was the letter that I read in the Oval Office waiting room in the White House archives. Roosevelt also stated that baseball could be a source of relaxation for American workers, whose hard work and well-being would be essential to victory. He added, quote, "If 300 teams use 5,000 or 6,000 baseball players, these players are a definite recreational asset to at least 20 million of their fellow citizens. And that, in my judgment, is totally worthwhile," end quote. And that day, the value of sports in America was cemented forever. Admiral Ernest King, commander-in-chief of the U.S. fleet during the World War II, said it best. All work and no play 7 days a week will soon take its toll on a nation's morale, end quote. If we could play baseball while the world was literally at war, we can fight through and play sports now, what's going to end up being a slightly more aggressive than normal flu season. That's just the statistic. President Trump is fighting exactly for that. He's called into NBC live broadcast at golf on Saturday saying, we want to get our sports back. We miss sports. Amen, President Trump. I support you 100%. You have the courage and the conviction to defend our nation's pastimes. Our pastimes are not just throwaway activities. They're escapes. They're places of nostalgia. They're flashbacks to our childhoods. They're appeals to our better humans when you look at sportsmanships and improbable stories of breakthroughs and miracles and comebacks of Michael Phelps winning and declining and winning. They're not just meaningless activities with a ball. They're something real. We need sports in terms of the psyche of our country, President Trump continued. We want to be back to normal, where you have big crowds, where they're practically standing on top of each other, not where they're worried. If President Trump takes the mantle of getting sports back, it will be truly a defining moment in his wartime presidency. Bring back baseball, bring back football, bring back basketball especially. Play the March Madness tournament in July. Why not bring back March Madness in July? We have the sponsors. We can get them playing again. Bring back sports will be a gateway to bring America back to prosperity, back to freedom, back to individual responsibility, feeling comfortable again in this time of natural crisis. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Please email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. We love hearing from all of you. Please get involved with Turning Point USA. Go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com, and type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider. Hit that subscribe button. Give us those five-star reviews. And can you get one friend to also subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show? That will help us surge in the charts, beat Joe Biden, beat Rachel Maddow, and be the fastest growing podcast in America. Send us your emails, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.